Spoiler alert, I watch a lot of Bravo, and when I'm not watching Bravo, I'm sitting in the cloth having a moment of spiritual growth, and when that's not happening, I'm living here in New York where there is a lot to do and not a lot of time to do it. The last thing that I want to be thinking about, let alone worrying about, is my hair. Now, I have wavy hair naturally. It also has color processing, which is surprising because I am a spiritual blonde. And as a result, I don't want to have to worry about frizz. That's why I love Way's anti-frizz cream. It works for my hair texture. It works for having wavy hair. It smells great. There are notes of bergamot, Italian lemon. You guys know I just went to Italy. It was for moments like this, violet and more. Having used a lot of products in my hair in the past, I don't like a heavy feeling, especially when you have wavy hair. That's incredibly important, which is why I love the anti-frizz cream. It makes my hair look like me just a little bit better. Way's new anti-frizz cream provides immediate frizz control that lasts up to 72 hours. It helps reduce and repair split ends. And according to a consumer perception study, 90% of participants agreed that their hair looks less frizzy. And I would like to know what that consumer perception study has to say about some original cast members of The Real Housewives of New York. You'll be way obsessed with Way's bestsellers. They're leave-in conditioner, detox shampoo, hair oil, gloss, and so much more. Frizz-free up your schedule with Way. Go to theouai.com and enter promo code Andy for 15% off any product. That's theouai.com, promo code Andy. C'est bon, c'est bon. Just call me colorblind because all I see is green.
I don't play dirty, but I do love masks.
Wait a second. Wait a second. First off, you guys, you know what show you're listening to. AG up 126. I did figure out what number it was. First off, our guest who I'm going to introduce in a hot second, first time on the AG People's People's Couch, prefaced us recording by being like, I don't know about this tagline. Can I say that? Are you going to get pissed at me for saying that? That was such a good, can you say it one more time I can like tattoo it on my arm? Because I was going to do a little open heart, but now I think I actually want to like tattoo your tagline on me.
Okay. I don't play dirty, but I do love mass. I know, I'd have to like play around with the variations of how I say it.
Well, it's all about the, I mean, you sometimes it does come down to the variation, but every variation of my love is like emanating for that tagline. So you guys, we have a new guest co-host and I'm so excited, Evan Ross Katz.
Thank you for having me.
I am so excited. First off, I've been stanning your Twitter for like more than a hot second, more like 4.5. I am very into it. And I am so excited that you're here because you are my favorite kind of co-host. You are a very well-researched Bravo-holic, which I appreciate. Because when people come on AG, listen, I love all Bravo stands, all Bravo people, comedians, writers, Bravo lebs. But I find it interesting when someone's like, yeah, I only watch Jersey. And maybe I've only seen the last three seasons. I'm like, okay, cool. Kudos to you. Like, that's amazing that your journey is recent. Like, that's one. Welcome to the family.
Yeah.
But also, if you love it, aren't you just interested in like a little bit of Atlanta?
Yeah.
Or don't you want to just like add in a touch of like new local flavor with Dallas or whatever was remaining of Dallas that we're now regurgitating this season? Like, don't you yearn to like go across the bridge and see a little bit of what New York has to offer? It's fascinating to me. So I love having someone who knows like real serious history. So I am so excited to study great American history with you today.
I don't know like how proud I am.
You should be very proud. This is a lifetime achievement. Well, have you seen every, because you've mentioned Miami before, you've mentioned, I think DC, rest in peace, right?
DC, and I enjoyed DC. Yeah, I've watched everything. I fell off of Jersey during season 6.
How could you not?
But came back, you know, when Margaret came along and saved things.
God bless.
And
then I'm trying to Jesus think, Christ superstar.
Yeah, I've seen everything else.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you are a writer who's been published in everything ever. Yeah. I mean, like, should we shout out your credits? Because it's just essentially any publication. Teen Vogue, Allure, MTV, Men's Health, Out, Playboy, Refinery 29, which just got bought by Vice, which
and
is an interesting development.
I'll announce here. I will be doing, are you familiar with the Cock Destroyers?
Wait, are those girls?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I will be profiling them in the new issue of Interview Magazine.
You need to, did you tell T. Kyle?
No, not yet. This literally just transpired.
Because can I tell you, I only know about them because of his Instagram.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're like, gay icons.
Wait, so who are they? They're adult film actresses?
They are. They have really, really interesting sort of origin stories, but essentially they're adult film stars that have gone like mega viral, but are actually like incredibly sort of like woke women in terms of LGBTQ rights, women's rights, sex workers' rights, etc. So,
and how old are they?
They're in their 40s. And actually, Rebecca has 2 kids, I recently learned. But so Jürgen Teller, who's like one of the most famous fashion photographers living today, is going to be shooting them for Interview. And I'm going to be profiling them. So I'm super excited for that.
This is huge.
Yeah. And it's funny, I pitched it to Interview months ago, and the editor-in-chief wrote back, and he was like, who are they? And I explained it, but it's kind of like hard to explain them on paper. You kind of just have to see the videos.
Yeah, or Google image Cock Destroyers and see what comes up.
Yeah, you'll get a lot. But then they finally got the email, and they were like, let's do this. And I was like, oh, yeah, for online? And they were like, no, for the next issue.
Oh, my God, so exciting.
Such a dream come true. So anyway, look out for that.
Wait, can I just ask one more Cock Destroyer question? So are they in films together? Or do they pair up as destroyers to help destroy the world?
Totally. Valid question. So I haven't done the interview with them yet, so I don't want to speak out of turn.
Yeah.
But it's my understanding that they have OnlyFans pages so that they record and distribute their own adult entertainment themselves.
They have only what pages?
OnlyFans.
What's that?
It's kind of like porn. It's kind of like, do you know what Patreon is for like podcasting?
Yeah.
It's sort of like that
same
thing.
I don't do.
It's the same thing, but for porn. Yeah.
Oh, that's super smart.
It's great. Yeah. And then so they direct to profit essentially. So I know she has an OnlyFans, which is like her main revenue stream in which she appears in videos that she makes with Sophie. I don't know if they do like studio porn.
Are they sisters?
No.
And their boobs, is that for
220 cc's is the amount of injection. I just was reading about this right before I came here. Because she's had 2 breast implants now.
In each boob?
I don't know.
Wait, you do mean 2 in each boob at once to make them that big or 2 different like operations?
2 different operations. Yeah.
Because that has to be hard to just like live your life.
You know, if you're interested, obviously stay tuned for my article. But
yeah,
Google,
guys, we're getting
Google,
in advance.
Cock Destroyers, The Face, the magazine, The Face. They
guys,
did
make
a really
sure
good
you
profile.
Do this at work, by the way.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
That's the most important. That's step 1. Google will not work unless your boss is standing right behind you.
But they're really fascinating.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's amazing. Yeah. Like many mazels and interviews. Super serious.
Yeah, it's like funny. It's like it's literally sitting on my coffee table. So I'm excited to be a part of my coffee table.
That's amazing. Well, I'm so happy to have you in my coffee table.
Thank
situation,
you.
Audio, podcast, shenanigan, etc. So let us. I have a writing related question. Is there a housewife that you think about and you're like, I would love to interview them? Not to say that that's your favorite housewife. It could even be someone that you hate, but someone that you would love to sit down with for the purposes of publishing a piece.
You know what? I'm going to give you a really strange answer because she's sort of top of mind. And she's one of my least favorite housewives.
If you say Daniel Staub, you're leaving right now. I'm going to ask you to leave.
No, I don't think she'd be very interesting. I would be interested in profiling Tamra. And I say that because I'm currently rewatching OC from the beginning. And I will admit, actually, I did skip a big chunk of season 6 because I was so bored. But
which one was season? Because I never know the number.
The original Peggy.
Oh.
Yeah.
Can't.
But, and it's also when Eddie
actually,
first comes.
Actually, Peggy Tanous wasn't bad.
It's not that she was bad. It's that she wasn't anything.
Yeah, because Alexis was like, I can't.
Yeah,
okay,
she
yeah,
was
yeah.
a nothing burger.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, the interesting thing about Tamara is that I think people often think of Tamara in the last couple seasons that we've seen of Tamara and sort of forget the early iteration of Tamara and sort of the abuse that she sort of suffered from her husband, Simon, at the time. Mm-hmm. And I just find Tamara's journey on this show to be a lot more interesting than she's given credit for, because Tamara really was in a relationship like Alexis where she was deferential to a man to a degree that she didn't understand that that was the case, because that's all she knew. And I really do feel like doing the show, she met these other women who lived their lives independently of men, and that gave her the fortitude to leave Simon and sort of start this whole new life for herself for the third time, because she'd already done that, leaving her first husband for Simon. So anyway, I just think Tamara has a lot to say, and I don't think she's ever done like a long form interview in which she's been asked to sort of like meditate on that, and I would love to sort of get into that with her.
That is such an interesting question. I wonder how open she would be. I would think actually that she might be open if she feels like she's not about to get like completely shit on.
Yeah, well, you know? I have to say, I've actually, because I really don't enjoy Tamara on the show in the last couple seasons.
God, but already such a favorite guest of mine.
But back, I have respect is probably not the word, but I like Tamara more than I remembered. And I think that if people were to go back, they'd be surprised at sort of like, she was a different force and a much more necessary force on the show, especially in the middle seasons. And I just think she's a really, you know, she's fascinating to study.
She has changed a lot. Certainly her story has changed a lot. But what I find interesting about her is that she has always been a shit stirrer. She has always, from, you know, pretending that like her relationship with Vicky and relationship with Simon, you know, where she's blaming Vicky for Simon shit and blaming Simon for Vicky shit. I mean, she, and I know that that's specific to a very dysfunctional marriage, but like Naked Wasted, there's a whole, and again, that's part of the Simon generation. She has done the Shannon fight at Bikini Swimwear, one season more, divorced her husband. Oh my God, I just forgot her name.
I'm blinking too.
Brunette. I remember the name of her swim line is like Beach Bunny, Sunny Bunny,
oh,
Sun
is
Bunny.
This Lizzie. Yeah.
The dinner party at Lizzie's where she, you know, essentially was the one that, you know, fed the beast enough for Shannon to break loose, you know, completely lose her mind. I mean, she has been relatively consistent in creating plot. And I just wonder when I look at her, like how much of that is organic? How much of that comes from her being a genuine broken bird who dealt with serious depression, you know, contemplated taking her own life, was in a destructive marriage, had a young kid, didn't pay the water bills or whatever, didn't know how the lights were going to come on. And how much that contributed to making her just like skittish versus her interest in like manipulating people versus her dedication to continue getting that huge Bravo check.
Yeah. And I have a great amount of empathy for her with regards to the decision to leave Simon, because her kids were really young at the time besides Ryan. And I really do think she was taking a huge leap of faith in terms of not being able to rely on Simon financially. And as we know, he, for whatever reason, or had a lot of money or purported to have a lot of money. And so I think that it was a really like brave and I don't know. It was, I love that moment for her, and it made me kind of have an empathy towards her that I don't think I remembered having or perhaps didn't have when I originally watched.
I want to continue this OC conversation, but is there a housewife that you would not want to interview where like if that opportunity came, you're like, I don't know if there is either enough here or if that's someone that I want to be in a closed door room with?
Well, I've interviewed Luann twice now, and she's someone I'd probably be the least interested in interviewing again, not because I've interviewed her, but just because I understand the veneer of being a housewife in an interview setting, because you're sort of being asked to reflect upon this heightened version of yourself. So it gets a little bit confusing because like you're talking about yourself, but you're talking about a version of yourself, and not everyone's great at sort of compartmentalizing those aspects of them, you know, of themselves. But I think that Luann, there's a level of dishonesty about her that is so intrinsic to how she's learned to function.
I'm dying.
That I find her to be not compelling
because
as a result.
And how much of that do you think is self-protection versus delusion?
I don't know the answer to that. I don't know.
To me, she comes across in person stunning. Let's start with beauty.
Beauty.
Because that's great. Yeah. Good for you. Yeah. Good for you at being a beautiful woman. She seems very focused on saying the same thing.
Yeah.
Maybe using different words, but probably not. Like, she's on a little bit of a hashtag systematic bullying tour right now with, like, the women weren't nice to me, but I'm a survivor. Look at me and let me make Giovanni jokes for 45 minutes. I had an AG listener reach out to me yesterday who was like, I left her show. He said it was just like tired jokes. It wasn't anything interesting. They were surprised about the landscape of the room, that it wasn't like gay men. It was entirely seemingly older white women who were getting trashed, which God bless, but it felt like it's on its like next generation. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not the, like, I remember being at her first performance and it was a huge fucking deal. Like, the vibe was there. The energy was there. It was crazy. It was electric.
Springsteen back in New York. Yeah.
For real.
Back in Jersey, excuse me.
I mean, amen. Same thing. but now it's like a little tired, and it feels a little tired when I hear her talk about her experiences on the show, because I don't think she's as interested in being truly introspective. And I don't know if that's because she's on her sober journey and she feels like that is going to be a trigger, or if she's just genuinely disinterested and is maybe surrounded by people who are telling her she's a goddess.
Or both. I mean, this might sound a certain way. So I filmed with them a couple weeks ago for season 11. And
now I'm sitting totally upright.
And Lou's assistant texted me and was like, will you come to XYZ, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, long story made medium length. I show up and I say hi to Luann, and our friend is like, oh, do you remember Evan? And she said, nice to meet you. And I've known Lou for many years. I've interviewed her, as I said, several times and interacted with her so much. And it's just like, and that's why, hey, my rule of thumb is always say it's good to see you in those settings. But also it's just like, wow, this person does not remember me. And it has nothing to do with my own self-importance, or I don't intend it to. It's just rather that I think that says a lot about who she is, that it's just everyone she meets is kind of like another face. And she doesn't really invest in sort of like getting to know people. Whereas other housewives that I have relationships, I don't know the word, but other housewives that I know and are so much kinder. And especially for a press person who is rooting for the majority of these women, I would just think that at the very least you would feign remembering the person. And I think that says a lot about Lou's character.
I just want to also say she couldn't have been lovelier when I kikied with her. And I am so appreciative of that. It's just that, like, if I had 3 hours to talk with a housewife, she wouldn't be in my top five because I want to dive in deep. And P.S., it's sort of interesting that we're talking about her, and I think we're feeling the same thing, because she was the only housewife, to my knowledge, that got that fun little spinoff of, like, before housewives, whenever they were whatever, where she was talking about her past life and she was talking about being in Europe and skiing and royalty and whatever the fuck else. And it was so good. It was so entertaining. Yeah. And it was like, are they opening the door for this for something for Luann, or less, which is less likely than like them just doing this with other housewives, which P.S. they should 1,000% do. And I don't know why they didn't. Yeah. But it's interesting that she was the one that was picked. And yet we are both saying that she's not necessarily the ideal person to have a conversation with, because the conversation will be, and this isn't me being trying to be negative, but it will be relatively superficial.
Yeah.
And there's, superficial is fine. Superficial is fun. It can be interesting, but I also want to like hear, I want to understand you. I want to understand the choices that you've made, and like really when you've been in the shit, how that felt and the influence of production.
Yeah.
And it can be hard to do that with someone who's still on the show regardless, because they don't want to ruffle any feathers, which is why I personally enjoy talking to people who are no longer on the show. They might be bitter. They might be desperate to come back, whatever. But they're going to typically be more honest than a housewife on a show, and certainly than a housewife that's like currently in production. But that being said, I do wish, just because with Luann, she's had like 15 different chapters. She's had such a journey on like a, she started off as a genuine socialite. People use the term, look at Ramona, who's like trying, Ramona's goal in life is to be Luann season one. Like she wants to be seen as that person that's like old school name, genuinely respected or whatever, invited to these glamorous things, speaking, getting awards, whatever, with her like shiny, sparkly, very wealthy husband. And I want to hear more about understanding the journey from that to Class with a Countess, to Divorcee, to Mrs. D'Agostino, to Christmas Eve Arrest, to, you know, whoever, Giovanni. Yeah. I mean, like, there are chapters that I didn't even mention. There's so much there. And I wish that she was as open to speaking about it as I am to, like, listening to her talking about it. Mm-hmm. But I don't live a sober life, and I've never experienced like that journey, and hers could not be more in the public eye. And because there are even like currently questions about the sobriety stuff, and now she's off probation, whatever else, and it's entirely her choice. It's completely up to her. But I just wonder how much of that is because she's afraid she's going to get burned, or maybe that her co-stars will use something against her, versus this is her self-protection mechanism and she can only look at the superficial stuff, versus she is like entirely disinterested in anything else but the very, very top layer.
Hmm.
Like, I don't know.
I don't know, but fascinating.
Yeah. Well, so what was your experience like? So what the fuck did you go to? What was this?
So this was an after party for Lou's comedy show, which you'll be seeing on the show this season.
Wait, stop. Comedy show as in not a cabaret? So the production said to her, you cannot say cabaret ever again.
Can't confirm that. But I know there was a comedy show and we were filming at some like ping pong place on like...
Spin?
No, but that kind of place.
Carol's favorite.
And I posted footage of this online, but basically I witnessed a fight. There's a big fight between Tinsley and Dorinda. Yeah. And I filmed that. And then everyone was getting along. Everyone was getting along except for Dorinda. Dorinda was fighting with everybody. The most memorable thing I can tell you was that when I was leaving, I was walking up the stairs with Lou, Sonia, and Ramona. And I got up the stairs first. It was like a spiral staircase. And I saw Dorinda sitting at the front. And as soon as she spotted us, she ran behind the step and repeat as the women exited. So whatever was going on, I'm sure it'll play out on the show, but there's
an amazing move.
Yeah, there's some kind of drama that went down. And then it's funny because I posted it on my Instagram story and I saw that Dorinda had looked at it and I just DM'd her and I was like, just making sure we're all good. And then she hearted my comment, so.
Because you were afraid that she was going to be like, why the fuck are you posting this?
The clip didn't make her look good because she was, God. You know, on
all the more
one.
Reason to watch it.
Right. But I just wanted her, I care about Dorinda. So I wanted to make sure she didn't feel like I was like violating her in any way.
So what did what did it seem like? It's hard to say, like, how did this feel to you when we're used to watching like an edited 44 minute clip where that could be 5 minutes of it or it could be like 37 yeah. minutes. How did it feel to you? How did the energy feel? Did it feel like they were desperate to do something because of their, you know, loss?
So Leo was there and then another friend that they're testing right now.
Who's Leah?
Leah's the newest Tinsley's friend.
Oh, right. The one who has a Republican boyfriend.
Don't know about that, but that would be interesting.
I read somebody told me something about her.
I will say this.
Or no, she's a Republican and her boyfriend's progressive. I forget.
I am like deeply, deeply in mourning over the Bethany thing. It's just gonna be, I've now gotten to the point where I'm very open to loving season 12. But it's just gonna be a different relationship that I'm going to have with the show because my love for Bethany sort of transcends Housewives and it's just more than that. I really think Bethany is a genius storyteller, communicator, comedian. I think one thing that I was told a long time ago was like, one of the best skills you can have in the world is the ability to get people into a room. And it's just like Bethany is that person in every sense.
My God, that's so good.
Yeah. So it's like, so anyways, I am open to new plots. I'm open to new drama, etc. I think that they're going to try an everyone against Dorinda plot this season. And I know Lou really wants to have a redemption arc this season. Fine. I'll obviously be tuning in. New York is my favorite franchise. I have taste. But... But it's just going to be really, really tough for me.
How did you feel as a, can I call you a Bethany Superstan?
Yeah.
Okay. An OG skinny girl.
Yeah. Phenomenal. Oh my God.
How did you feel about the way that she exited this go around?
Love.
You did?
Yeah.
As a viewer, you love that she told nobody but her publicist and the day they were supposed to film or the night before?
Yeah. I mean, I just feel like she did it her way. And obviously, if you look at like the response in the comment section of her post, it was just such a classy way to do it. And I also really appreciate the fact that Bethany makes no bones about the fact that like this show made her and she loves these women and she appreciates this experience. So I think that it wasn't like a big fuck you to the show, as other women have done when they exited. I think it was just a feeling of this has run its course. And I, as much as people want to paint this as like she was about to film that night, it's like she could have literally, like, there are much shittier things that she could have done by way of exit. And it's just like, I think she went out on top, as she always does.
Love that. So have you been following her social media this week?
Yeah.
So the boobs. Well, yeah, two-parter. Some questions were, it's like not that she ruffled feathers, but some questions were raised about two things that she posted on social.
Yeah.
The first, I forget if it's in the same order, maybe they were done at once. The first was a card picture thing that Brynn made for her that she shared on social that says, "To mom, sorry about your family. I hope you have a good one now. P.S. I love you. Love, Brynn." With beautiful uses of color.
Yeah.
And almost like a burgeoning Matisse.
Lou's daughter is shaking.
Victoria wishes. And then she posted, I think it was a story of Brynn, who, as we know, is not allowed to show her face on social.
However, you can see her.
And and I have seen her on stories in the past. It's never on posts. It's always on stories. And I wonder if there's a strategy behind that.
Yeah.
But it's Bethany talking about skinny girl tank tops or something. I honestly forget. And Brynn is holding her boobs and like gesticulating with Bethany's bosom as she's talking.
Yeah.
And it's not meant to be sexual. I don't think anyone has received it as sexual at all. It's just an interesting choice to look at that video. And maybe you share it with some friends. You're not going to share it with your ex, but maybe you like send it to so-and-so. Isn't this cute? Isn't this adorable?
Yeah.
But knowing that there is a reason your child isn't allowed to have a presence on social media, you share that with a couple million people. I just found that to be an interesting decision.
Yeah. So all I can say, I don't have strong feelings about it, but I will say this. I feel that Instagram story, which is my favorite platform of communication.
Yeah, I love it.
The difference to me, and I agree with you, it's like sort of like, oh, you're sharing to a million people. Instagram story, unlike feed or unlike Twitter, is an opt-in, right? So when something pops up on your Twitter, it will scroll by you, not by your own volition. But that's not the case with feed. So I feel like, as anyone that follows Bethany's very lengthy stories knows, Bethany is giving you every goddamn detail.
We are
getting every flip of the grilled cheese. Like, we're getting in the thick of it.
Musical theater.
Yes. So I just feel like that, yes, for a casual Bethany viewer, those posts might have seemed quite strange, but for anyone that's sort of like familiar with what they're buying into, it was sort of par for the course. If people are offended by it, I would say don't click on it.
Amen. And do you think she'll come back?
To Housewives.
Yeah.
I really think it's an I don't know.
Really?
Yeah. I think it just sort of depends on, you know, I wish her so much success with these new television endeavors. And I think it will see how these go. And I think Bethany's very much goes where the wind takes her in terms of if it feels right for her to come back, she'll come back.
It's a hard pill for me to swallow because I was a super Bethany stan, loved her. I own every episode of the three seasons of her spinoff. I have seen them many, many multiples of times.
Yeah.
She came back and I was like, who's this chick? Like, she was riding so high on the popularity that she had received off season that I was like, this went to her a little bit. And then she hardened. I felt like she was cruel. It felt like whatever. And then the last couple seasons and this season, maybe the best of any housewife of any franchise. And I honestly have said on this show repeatedly, like, Bethany doesn't live here anymore. I was convinced that she would never return because I felt like she had too much money and too much fame. And you know what? Fuck me, because she fucking came back. Like, I thought this past season, with everything that she genuinely went through with Dennis and everything else, I was like, shit, man. Like, she is really giving it, but she's also not doing it only at the expense of other people. She's genuinely funny. It seems like she is really gone through something. She's kind of come back down to earth a little bit. Obviously, she has more money than anybody else on that franchise. God bless. But it felt like that wasn't necessarily being used as much as a weapon as it has before. Yeah. And so to have her leave now, I was like, God, no, because you're back. Like, I didn't know that I would get my love back. Like, love of my life.
Well, I'm glad that we got a season after all of the Carol Michigas, because I feel like that became a bigger thing than it was for either of them, just by the fans flaming the fan.
Shit hitting the fan, and then it's flaming, and then it's fanning, and then
So I'm glad that she had like a Carol free season, because I never really bought that drama was uninteresting to me, in that I am never a fan of the genuine friendship falling apart on the show. I think that's when the show is at its worst. So for instance, it's like the Nini Cynthia, like a genuine friend, like that, I will never be interested in that plot because they are meant to be friends. The Jill Bethany thing is so different because it was like the foundation was cracked to begin with. And so I feel like I feel so strongly about this. Like, when the show tries to do that, these two people are meant to be friends thing, and they're like, Karen and Giselle are a great example of like, they're meant to be frenemies. So when they fight, it's golden, because it's like, we're not sitting there hoping, you know, that this will come together. We want a mess from them, and they deliver. My mother's. I feel like in the case of, that was like one of those instances of like, okay, you two are both really wildly successful, smart women that understand the mechanism of this show so well and respect each other. And honestly, oh my gosh, when I go back and rewatch their budding friendship in season 7 and how organic it was, I love them both. And like, I love the friendship that they built, and I think it's dumb. I didn't like that we had to do that in season 10. But anyway, all that to say, I'm glad that we got season 11 to sort of like build Bethany back up, and I'll just forever appreciate her. I mean, honestly, hyperbole aside, she's one of my heroes, and I really do feel like she exemplifies the American dream. Like, in all seriousness, I feel like we can, you know, say, oh, it's just reality TV, blah, 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 but like, Bethany is the American dream.
She's what everyone thinks they can do, but she actually did it. Yeah. How many people think I have a great idea? Like, she had a great idea, it didn't work out. She had another great idea, it didn't work out. Like, this is the woman that was Bethany Bakes. Like, she thought it was Bethany Bakes that was going to hit it big, and then P.S. she was ordering this drink. I mean, yeah, for real. But she's one of those people where if it hadn't been Skinny Girl, I truly think it would have been something else.
Yeah.
Like, she had it within her. It is deeply, intrinsically, specifically American in like the best way.
Yeah. I mean, also, I feel like she's just a born leader. Like, when she talks, I listen. Like, I really do feel like if Bethany, texted me right now and was like, be at this address at this time, I would literally be like, drop everything to get there, just because, like, you know, and as the wonderful humanitarian work that she's done within all these crises around the country, it's just like, Bethany rises to the occasion.
Okay, totally different question. # this is a crisis. Who do you despise? Who is your least favorite housewife that you're like, do not, it's has nothing to do with interviewing, anything else? Who do you like look at and you're like, I fucking hate you? And maybe that's entertainment wise or just you hate them, they have the spirit of the devil, they do not have a soul, you know, whatever, it's just like vultures flying. Who is that person to you? Everybody has one.
Current or former?
Both, either, whatever.
My least favorite housewife of all time is Gretchen. Just because I feel like the show invested so much in Gretchen and Gretchen didn't deliver like ever. Like, and it's, so it's not necessarily Gretchen's fault, but the show like centered her as the star of the show in a way that she never earned. And Gretchen wasn't a good fighter. So Gretchen's probably my least favorite, like, ever. And then currently, I guess it's Teresa. And only because, it's not even that I adamantly hate Teresa, it's that Teresa's such a nothing that was iconic for a few years, many years ago, and we've like kept up with, and like I don't root for or against her, and like she's not a good fighter, and she's not a loyal friend. And so it's like, I feel like I love a Housewives villain, but I particularly like when a villain has sort of like people on their side or has qualities. Like Jill is a great example of, like, Jill was the villain, but like you kind of loved her, at least I did. Like, there was a lot of redeeming qualities about Jill, and you understood why she made the choices she made. Not to say that I didn't support them, but I was like, okay, I get what's going through her mind.
Totally.
And I just feel like in the case of Teresa, it's like she doesn't learn from her past mistakes. She's not a very smart person, I'm going to say. And I also feel like...
Breaking news.
Yeah. And I feel like this line gets crossed a lot on the shows. It's happening right now in OC with Jolie. But I feel like Teresa's kids in particular, you see the trauma and how it's sort of like... ruined their lives.
What did you think about, I mean, I guess you've just answered this, but what did you think about the fact that in the trailer for the upcoming season of New Jersey, it seems like Gia, who might be 17 at the time, still a minor, and P.S. if she was 18 or 19, because I feel that about Tamara's beautiful son who's being just completely abused on camera. And I'm not speaking about Spencer.
Yeah. I was just making sure. Yeah. I wasn't hanging out. Yeah.
You guys, Ryan is just the best.
Oh my God. Spencer for president.
For real. But what do you think about the use of G on this forthcoming season, noting what you just said about Jolie?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we have this with the Ladies of Rock right now with Shannon's daughters getting confessionals. And Jolie had one as well on Rock. I'm not for it. I mean, I obviously every parent has the autonomy to do what they want to do. And obviously they're not the first show to do this. I mean, look at like Dance Moms, for instance. But I just think I think it's exploitative. And I think not to jump franchises, but like,
do it.
The Jolie stuff really, I do think, kind of crosses the line a little bit. There was a moment this past week that, like, I won't really forget, and like that didn't sit well with me because Kelly was crazy. But when she stands up and she's crying and she says to her, "You, Jolie hates you," and the way she said that, and the idea that I think Jolie is like 13 or 14, but the way she said it. To me, like, the subtext was like, you didn't just ruin my life, you ruined my daughter's life. And I don't like, and Vicky surrendered. But I don't like to see that on the show. And I think I get kind of like uneasy about the kids getting involved with the adults. I think we saw the first taste of that. Like, it was like season 6 or 5 of OC when Brianna was present during like one of the fights with all the ladies and was like, "I'm 19 years old and you ladies are like, you guys fight more than our friends do." And I was like, that I thought was like, okay, I get it. Cause Brianna was always of age.
And she's always been an old soul. She's the perfect person.
Yeah. Doesn't pick the perfect man. But I don't know. I'm not a big fan of kids on the show. And it's also funny cause it's like, you think about like, people like Sonia, there's several of the women who like have these whole interior lives with kids that you never see. And it's just like, Tamara is another one who has like these adult, or because the one daughter was on the show, but not the other one. She's
not, Sydney hasn't been on since. But I want to say before the divorce, because now they're
like,
estranged.
It's funny that you think it's like, you don't watch a show thinking Tamara's a mother of 4.
Right.
But like Vicky is so much like, you know Vicky as this mother of these two. So I just think it's interesting the role that kids have played on the show.
I think it works. Sorry.
No. I was just going to say, please. The kid that has done it right for me is Avery Singer, in terms of like, she's around occasionally. She's been in some pivotal scenes and she's a listener, but she's never a drama starter.
And she's smart. She knows her mom's like kind of full of shit.
Yeah.
The point that you raised is especially interesting to me because in a few cases, Sonia Tremont Morgan, Brandy, Tamara, these are moms and women who would have been greatly helped, I think, in the public eye and with fans if they were shown in that maternal sympathetic lens where it's like, I'm also a caregiver. I'm not just incredibly destructive in my life and everyone else's. I also like am a parent and I want to show this. But in all of those cases, their exes or whomever they were estranged with forbid it.
Yeah.
Sonia pretends that she's doing this because she made a choice that her child is not going to be on camera.
Yeah.
But it was a part of her divorce settlement.
Yeah.
Brandy is not allowed to show her kids on camera because of the arrangement that she has
with
her ex-husband.
Which totally changes, as you just mentioned, the audience's like ability to relate to you.
Totally.
I think about the very first episode when they introduced Bronwyn this season on OC and how they gave us this glimpse into her interior home life. And I remember walking away from that being like, okay, boring housewife, great mother.
Yeah.
And so, and because it was like, you saw how well she held down the fort of her zoo of a home. And I think that that really informed her story moving forward. And it's like, imagine Bronwyn without these seven kids as being sort of like a present within her storyline. I think it's really helpful to have the kids, although there are some instances when you see like the bad parenting going on. But it's interesting too, like which housewives you really associate with kids, because like, as I said, I'm rewatching season 7 of OC and it's like, I forget that like Alexis has kids. And recently, because I'm really into Alexis on Instagram, I saw her two teenage daughters like leaving for, like, what is it? So it's the first day of school, I guess.
The
October.
Twins, right?
Yeah. And they're like grown adults. And I was like, oh my God, like I had no idea Alexis had daughters, just because that like wasn't a part of her time on the show. They were on the show. They just weren't characters on the show. And I think another example of that is like Shannon's daughters have become characters over the years, but it's like in the beginning it was like Shannon's got these three girls, but now all of a sudden it's like they have confessionals, they're going to prom, they're characters.
It is surprising to me that David hasn't pursued making sure that the kids remain off camera. I'm just saying, I just find that interesting, and I die for Shannon. I'm fully obsessed and in love with Shannon.
Can't relate.
I just want to say that I know, like, I hear you guys and you guys DM me and you're like, what the fuck? I understand. And I am happy to have a conversation about some complications, but, and her like struggle and riding the struggle bus and becoming Tres Amigas instead of, you know, continuing to turtle time with Kelly. I think that would have maybe made people understand her more instead of aligning herself with these women, especially since the season has ended. But I do love her. And it's because I do honestly see a lot of myself in her. Like, okay. I really do. I love her. I feel love for her. When she giggles when she's talking, this isn't me, but like when she giggles when she's talking about like, in order to stay awake, I need a glass of wine. Like, I'm laughing. Like, I think she's funny. Like, I just genuinely... Yeah. Love her. I'm just surprised that the kids are there, but it's also maybe because the kids are not and have not been used.
I was going to say.
Aside from the scene in the limo where she was like, grandma hates me. You know, like aside from that, they have not been used as weapons of war.
Yeah, absolutely. And they probably benefit. I think that they benefit from being on the show.
Yeah, I think that Shannon, honestly, had a camera crew not been there, she would have been talking about quinoa bowls and like silently crying, regardless of what had happened with production. And now mommy's happy and she's making cream cheese stuffed salmon happen. She's as happy as, you know, she's sort of like she's as happy as she's going to get. She's in a good place, even and on the road to like an even better one right now.
Yeah, no doubt. And obviously wish her the best. I think the thing is, at the end of the day, Shannon Bedore is best friends with Jeff Lewis. And I think that that's sort of everything I need to know about who Shannon chooses to spend her time with. Off camera.
Why is she, I don't understand. And I feel this about Leah Black, who I've had on AG and I've interviewed her several times in Miami. Love. And she is as wonderful as you would want her to be.
A good woman.
So good. Very shady. Needs to be back on something ASAP. Yeah. I do not understand.
Bring her to Dallas.
Oh my God, in a second. But also bring her to Beverly Hills because she has an LA place. Like, and they need an alpha who has a shit ton of money and a lot of opinions and very funny and quick and whatever.
Totally.
But I don't understand why she's so close with Jeff, because Leah is such a smart woman and gets it. And I think she really gets TV now, even though obviously like we've all had our own journeys as like pretend housewife. But, you know, like she's like, she had her journey with Anna and everything else in Miami, but... I know. But I just am. It's surprising to me that she's as close with Jeff as she is. It's surprising.
Yeah.
Because he is incredibly self-destructive.
Yeah.
And also just destructive.
Yeah. I mean, this is going against my tagline. But I mean, I do love mess. But like Jeff's brand of mess to me is like unappetizing.
He went in on Andy this week and was like, he was like, you made jokes about flirting with Gage after we broke up. And it's like, sweetie, he apologized that first off. But second off, you say everything about everything relating to your breakup on a radio show. And Gage does not have that platform.
Also, like, you don't bite the hand that feeds you.
He bites the entire hand off. What he did to Jenny, it was not okay. And now they expanded his show to 5 days a week. And
it's very strange.
He's so funny, but he's so destructive. And it gets so dark. And knowing that he and Gage are no longer. And I felt like Gage provided such a light, not only on the show. Like, mm-hmm. whatever. Like, maybe Gage had, like, some scheming moments. You know, maybe initially or whatever. But, like, Jeff has isolated himself from every single, from Ryan to like every single person who has ever supported him, worked for him.
Yeah.
Zoila and he no longer talk. Like, there are problems there. And going back to your original point about Shannon, that is to me not great. I don't know if she does it because Shannon's someone who doesn't always express how she's thinking. And sometimes you go for people who, even if they lean like way too far left, are able to do what maybe you are not comfortable doing. I don't know. Maybe that's why. Maybe she finds him funny. I did enjoy the Jeff versus Heather Dubrow situation because I did actually believe his side in that she was being a shit to a waiter and he was like, go fuck yourself. And I liked how that continued for a year and a half for absolutely no reason. Yeah. This like 2 minute moment.
Bring back Heather.
Bring back Heather.
Think though, so Jeff is like such a retrograde gay man in that he exists in a world in which gay men have this freedom to sort of like come into a woman's life and make it better. Like, he feels like it's just this feeling of inferiority sort of like perpetuated through the patriarchy, but it's this idea that like because he's gay, he gets a pass at saying things to women that would otherwise be unacceptable from a man because he's gay. And I just feel like, I don't feel like Jeff views his relationships with women as equal, as we saw play on the show with Jenny and with Zoila. I just think he has this inferiority complex about his relationships with many people in his life, it seems like. And I ultimately find that to be like gross.
You're like blowing my mind right now. So let's talk about something that's blowing up, which is the last two seasons of Real Housewives of Orange County. Holy fucking I did not, again, it's like the Bethany moment, but for a franchise. I did not know this was possible. I assume this was dying, dead, rest in peace, gone. Yeah. Like, no more. Like, this half or 75% of the last season of Beverly Hills. I was like, we're just gonna get through Orange County. I don't give a shit about Gina. I don't give a shit about Emily. I fucking hate Shane. And while the latter will apply till the day I die, last week was fucking unbelievable, and this week was so highly enjoyable. I was shook.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts? Especially because now you're rewatching and you're on season 7. Like, what are you thinking?
Yeah. So I think OC finally handled a problem that it's had for a long time in this specific episode, which is that OC, in the past couple of years, has been able to generate big fights, but it's never been able to find resolution. And I think the reason why New York is the success that it is because the women are able to have these explosive fights and then they wake up the next morning and go and kayak or paddleboard or do whatever they need to do. They're professionals. And so I feel like OC, there's just always been, OC's really big on feuds, but like kind of like, for instance, it's like, there's just so much unresolved stuff on OC, but it like never has resolution. It's just kind of like these two people hate each other. And so this episode finally gave us like the Emily Gina reconciled. We got the unexpected Vicky,
Kelly
reconciliation. We got a sort of Tamara Emily reconciliation or a forced one, but it finally was able to like take the big fight and then bring us back down, which is ultimately like where the fun lies. And one reason why I've never connected with Kelly as a character on the show is because she only sort of has one mode. And this episode, for the first time, she said something that I found so powerful. And actually like kind of made me like emotional.
I'm here for this. It's when I'm here with you.
She turned to Vicky and she was like, her tears in her eyes, And she said, I only called you a pig because Slade said that about you and I knew it would hurt your feelings. I don't actually think that. And it's such a childish thing to do in the first place, and then it's such a childish thing to say. And yet, I found it really moving because I know how much, I think calling a person, making fun of a person's physical appearance, obviously, I think is a line cross. And then also then to do it on national television, it's also something that sort of like dogged Vicky over the years because of Slade's comments, which really funny. I actually just watched that episode not that long ago.
When he was pretending to be a comedian. All this comedy tour. Yeah, great.
But I really loved that moment. And I think it humanized Kelly in a way that the show has never done before. And it was like the first time where it's like, okay, you're admitting that everything you've done is not out of anger, but is masked hurt. And it's like, I finally felt like we got somewhere because I can work with that, right? And it's like, and so I just thought that was like a really, sometimes the show does something that I think is like actually like kind of like bigger than, I don't know, bigger than itself sometimes. And it sort of like makes a really profound statement. And I really like that moment so much because I think a lot of people can relate to the idea of saying something out of anger that they actually didn't mean. And there's that thinking sometimes, well, like, but you know, when you're drunk, you say what you really mean or like blah, blah, blah. But I think Kelly in that moment was like admitted to the fact of like, it wasn't just that she admitted that she said it to hurt her, but then she tacked on the idea that she didn't actually mean it. And I just felt in that moment, I was like, oh my God, we actually like advanced. And I think that was cathartic for the women and for the show.
So did you think that that moment, that scene, those apologies, did you find it genuine?
No. No. But no, I didn't. I mean, also, Vicky, the I surrender, iconic. I think she said it three times at
she
least.
Was like, I cannot say I'm sorry.
Which is so Vicky, which is like, I can't really like deal with what I've done. All I can say is that I want to move forward. And it's like, no, Vicky, like you have to deal with what you've done. And also like Vicky, again, and there's so many instances now, but like Vicky, especially this week with the like, I heard this thing. Well, where'd you hear it from? I can't say. It's like, Vicky, you make it impossible to root for you because you literally start shit. You're below the belt. Like, and you do it for no good reason, but to be dirty. Which it's like gross, which is I think part of the reason why she doesn't belong on the show anymore. But I do think something of like, what's it called? A coup d'etat? Is that the term?
Yeah, sure.
Was sort of reached in terms of the issue that we were dealing with was like that one of these two women refused to film with the other.
Right.
Which is like the worst position we can be in.
Yeah.
It's kind of like we had that a little bit with Kelly and Bethany back in season two. Mm-hmm. And that's why Scary Island was so iconic because it forced that scene out.
Yeah.
But we needed that moment because it was like, okay, if Kelly and Vicky can't be in the same room, then we can't keep rehashing this plot. So like we're stuck. And I feel like this week, at least we got to the point where it's like, okay, we can have a friendship again. Unfortunately, we know based off of Watch What Happens Live appearances and Twitter that they are not in a good place currently. So we are going to somehow double back to this bad, to the upside down. But for now we got somewhere. So
it's interesting. That's such a good point. It's interesting watching the after show that they just started again. Because the women are like, and obviously this is a lot of this is coming from Shannon, who's team Vicky, which is the wrong side to be on.
Always.
But she goes, that wasn't genuine. The apology tier stuff. And she said, and I think Emily backed her up, but I could be completely wrong. No, it wasn't Emily. I think Gina maybe backed her up, but I could be completely wrong because they were asking the women who were sitting in.
It was Bronwyn, that was with Shannon.
Who said it was, yeah. So, and I think it was Shannon.
I'm sad
and then,
for like knowing this.
No, I love this. I think it was Shannon and then separately Gina, who both said that the apology wasn't genuine because of something that Kelly said immediately after the cameras went down. And that Shannon felt that Vicky was more genuine because she could see it in her face. And watching it twice, not the after show, which I only watched once, but watching the episode twice, I felt the exact opposite. My thinking is if Kelly said some bullshit after the cameras went down, it's because Kelly probably is crying. A lot of that crying can come from sadness. It doesn't necessarily have to come from catharsis. I cry when I'm angry. If I'm crying in front of you, it's because I'm like really fucking pissed. And that's
they were
the
drinking.
Way. And they were drinking. So if Kelly is like, this is bullshit right after the cameras run down, it doesn't mean that in that moment there wasn't actual pain there. Kelly might have been felt like she was forced into like hugging or something, but I do think that there was genuine emotion. And then I look at Vicky and it's like Vicky's favorite musical is Jesus Christ Superstar because it's based on her life. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, she just, she doesn't, it's like there's, it's not real. I don't know if it's because her brand is fake because, you know, like hashtag City of Nope, but Kelly herself said something on Twitter that was so good, and I absolutely don't remember the exact semantics or whatever the... What was the word that Vicky used this week when she was trying to say semantics? And she was like...
Oh, God. Schematics. Yeah.
So if this isn't schematics, yeah. But it was something along the lines of, like, I'm not going to look to Vicky to show me what like being truthful is about or something. And there's something to be said for that. And I'm watching that moment of Vicky saying I surrender over and over because she does not on camera want to say I'm sorry. And as the plane is going down, she is refusing to take responsibility until as late as fucking possible. And her tears to me felt like nothing from them. I was super entertained, but I didn't feel like it was real. It felt false.
You know, an example of a similar situation happening that stuck the landing was in season 10 of New York when Lou and Dorinda were having all of their big mess and they were on the vacation and Lou and Dorinda were like in the hallway and Carol was there, but then Carol exited when she realized what was happening. And there was that genuine moment of like, I don't want to do this anymore. I love you. And I love that moment so much. There's something, a specific line from that I really like that I can't remember. But that was like one of those moments because I hated the Dorinda Lou fighting because I was like, you guys are friends. Like, this is so weird. Like, if you watch the early seasons, Dorinda used to defend Lou like bar none. So similarly, like with the Vicky thing, it's like, it's not fun when you all keep fighting, especially for the viewer. So sometimes, if nothing else, I just wish that some of the women would get savvier to the idea of like not all of the fights are of equal merit. And like, it's sometimes fun when people get along. For instance, I think we're really going to have a good time this season with Portia and Kenya being friends. And I cannot wait.
I genuinely want to see a sisterhood there. Yeah. I know that there is one.
Yeah. So it's like, I am all for like the frenemies. I think, like, again, to reference Giselle and Karen as being a great example of like it working really well, but when true friends become true enemies on the show, I think that it's never my fave.
But Giselle and Karen, I look at them, I'm like, they respect each other. Kelly does not respect Vicky,
and she shouldn't
even a little bit. But also, Kelly was the one that was stepping up for Vicky. Did the fissure not happen when Vicky didn't tell Kelly she was setting up Michael with someone else?
Yeah.
And they like went to dinner. It's like, what, you are weaponizing this fight that started because of your own poor behavior,
right?
And you're pretending that you guys are unequal. This is the thing that annoyed me the most about what Shannon was saying of like, don't, and Tamara I'm sure said it too, because whatever the fuck, but like, don't do those like low blow moves. And it's like, well, but the biggest low blow move was the hurt that was coming from this woman saying like, I thought you were on my side. I thought you were my friend. And you were someone who's been through enormous breakups and should understand how important like being consistent with your team is. And for Vicky to say these things, regardless of whether they're true. And Tamara said she heard the same rumor about the school. And P.S. Do I believe that that has like a nugget of truth? Of course I do. Yeah, I'm sure that she said some shit. But regardless, you are saying these things specifically to hurt someone. You're not saying them because you saw it. You're not saying it because
it doesn't affect you at all.
It doesn't affect you at all. It also doesn't affect production seemingly at all.
Yeah.
I don't think that Kelly says that she doesn't use drugs, and I believe her. I think that Kelly doesn't need drugs to be enter a manic state. I think that's like kind of a part of her spirit. And so I look at what Vicky has chosen and selected to use to get revenge. And it's like, this is way too low based on what Kelly was saying to you, which was, you hurt my feelings.
Yeah.
Like, this is how it started.
But it's also interesting because it's like, Vicky's been doing this now for 14 years, and it's like, she still chooses to play this game, even with the awareness of how she comes off. So it's like, Vicky has this bizarre quality, which is like, she actually just like, whereas like Lou will go into this season with the like the grounds of like, okay, I want a redemption year. Vicky like does that's not in her mind. So Vicky doesn't see this as sort of like, actually, this experience will be better if the fans are behind me and I can to some degree control how much the fans like me. Bethany being a great example of someone who fans really undulated on. Mm-hmm. And it's like with Vicky, I don't think she has that understanding that like, when they do a Bravo poll of like, whose side are you on? And Vicky gets a zero. Like she like will like be like, I don't care. And it's like, and so, so Kelly as well. But it's like, okay, but like maybe if you want to be a part of this show and like want to reap the benefits of this show, like maybe care.
It's so tough, but like, it's just, it's shocking that I'm in this position where I'm arguing passionately about Orange County in a way that I truly never thought I was ever going to.
I know. I was like, cancel this.
Did you watch Gina's episode of Watch What Happens?
I haven't yet. It's on my DVR. No.
So I
but I love Gina.
Do not currently have a DVR because I am cheap as fuck. It is not on.
She says in the Upper East Side.
I mean, it's because I got priced out of Brooklyn. Thank you so much. A closet. No, a attic in Gowanus was more expensive than this apartment. Uh-huh. But if I tell my relatives in Rhode Island I live on the Upper East, they think I'm made of money.
Yeah,
it could not be the same. So I haven't seen the full episode because for whatever reason, it's not on Bravo's app, website, or on demand in full. But I have seen clips and there was a line that Gina said that I took note of on this season of Orange County where she was joking with Emily and she was like, I'm used to the abuse, honestly, which in light of everything that's going on in her life did not age well, shall we say? And who knows how much of that was her just speaking off the cuff and saying some shit versus like shit going on behind the scenes. But there were, I watched the clips in the after show from her episode and there was a moment where a listener called in and they said, listen, I work for or I run like a domestic violence thing. And thank you so much for being not like a role model, but a spokesperson against domestic violence. And the look of horror and like fear on Gina's face.
Oh my God.
Because she's not a spokesperson for domestic violence. She has experienced domestic violence to the extent that we know about it because of police intervention that's happened since the show aired, I want to say. But since the show was filmed, but before it aired. And now they're, I mean, she mentions that they're co-parenting through a government website. So they're like going through the motions, but she has not, to my knowledge, spoken public about it, at least not specifically. And it was a moment where I was like, oh fuck, the ride that Gina is going on right now on camera with the DUI stuff, with this amazing, to me, I could not get enough of the Gina Emily fighting stuff. I think it is fascinating and it ties with their own traumas and like my trauma is bigger than your trauma and you know, why aren't you there for me? But
a little bit of gaslighting going on in that type,
on who's Gina gaslighting Emily?
No, I feel like Emily was gaslight. Wait, so hold on. Sorry. I feel like
it's so complicated.
It is complicated. I feel like Emily was gaslighting. Hold on.
No, because I think they're both doing it to each other a little
bit. But there was, but anyway, go on.
About the Vegas thing? Shane?
Yes. Well, because it was like, Gina was like, I have these valid feelings about everything that I'm going through that you're ignoring. And then Emily like spun it around. I think it's like you said, I think they were both sort of gaslighting each other. But I did get the sense from that fight that they do both genuinely care about each other and have a friendship outside the show.
Yeah. And I think they're both a little bit wrong and I can't figure out.
A little bit wrong, but I like them both.
I like them. Oh God, I'm such a terrible person, but here we go. I like them both fight. I like the fight because I appreciated it. I respect it. It is genuine. It is real. I think they both, I'm not putting them on the same level. I'm not doing the Shannon Bedore Kelly Vick thing, but I think that they're both being honest in how they feel, regardless of like what the actual facts of the case are. And I think they both make points, even though it's not like even playing fields. But I watched that clip of Gina on Watch What Happens, and I was like, oh shit, because she's going through so much trauma on camera with being honest about Matt. That's his name, right? Matt's like cheating and the DUI stuff. And then the filming wraps or whatever they're doing, she has this insane domestic violence situation that, from what I've heard and read about, is horrific. So she knows that people know about that. And then she's being told on a live show that she's a representative for someone and for something that she has not publicly addressed specifically. And spoiler alert, she's in the middle of all these, like, you know, her ex-husband is asking for spousal support and they're trying to figure out custody and everything else. And it's like, you have to talk about all this stuff that's happening in real time to millions of people who you don't actually know, like how deeply violating. Like, we see a little glimpse of how that can be triggering with Stephanie's mental health stuff on Dallas. And for Gina, I watch it and I'm like, oh man, I feel for you. I mean, it's sort of a joke when people talk about her glam and the fact that she was selling extensions on Insta stories this week, because it's like, of anybody, Gina? But it's, she's doing her very best. She might not be a natural fit for how we think of these women as they come through. But oh my God, for her to be this new to the franchise and have to go through this amount of serious drama on and off camera is a huge adventure. That's not the right word. It's a huge challenge for her to overcome.
Well, I think that the last couple of weeks have been really redemptive for her in terms of, love the talk with Shannon at the bizarre furniture store. And I think that one really likable thing about Gina that's emerged is like the ability to clearly articulate her situation and not play the victim in confessional or like on the show in any sense, but kind of just be like, especially with the Emily thing, it's like, hey, like, I'm just going through a lot here. Like, it's just I don't want to say matter of fact, but there was a way in which Gina delivered the message so clearly in a way. And Gina, especially compared to these women who are all significantly older than her, Gina just carried herself really well on this trip. Case in point, when the whole Emily thing happened, she got up and walked out of the room. Like, Gina handled herself really well that I don't think we'd seen before. And I really do think the last 2 weeks, like, established Gina as, like, somebody to stick around, because I know myself and a lot of people had a lot of feelings about Gina and Emily returning.
I had a lot of feelings. I was completely against it.
Yeah, and now I'm kind of like, I feel like the two of them, separately and together, have both sort of like earned spots on the show. And I also like, just briefly, the Emily thing with regard to the Shrek thing, I think that it's such a violation, and I think that Tamara, like, if they're not going to do it on the show, it would be really good of Tamara to publicly, like, address that, because it's just such a cruel thing to say about a person, and she didn't take ownership of it, and they showed the flashback.
I love a flashback. My God.
And it's not a good look, and I think it's really, really hurtful, and I know that Emily deals with body shaming from air quotes fans, and I just think Tamara should be more sensitive to that.
Here's my problem, and I've said this,
it's like, who's going out of their
I, you know, poor sweet lovely Sarah Paulson this week was like, LVP was a dick to me, and people are coming out of the woodwork to be like, who the fuck are you, and blah blah blah, and Emmys aren't gonna give you puppies, and like whatever else bullshit, and LVP buys into it. She's responding to people who are Sarah Paulson truthers who are saying, well, she was friendly with so-and-so, so it must be. I don't understand it. I don't understand people who DM children of housewives, which happens, and I'm sure has happened to Jolie countless times. Yeah. I don't understand people who call out a housewife's weight, height, sort of marriage, although that's kind of like iffy. That's a gray area.
But I think the thing is, like, I think it's a known thing on, like, whether it be podcasts or Twitter or what have you, it's just like, housewives' looks are kind of off limits, and so I just feel like,
unless you look like the Crypt Keeper, BCC, one very specific New Jersey former housewife who we will not speak of.
But I mean, I just think it's just not a good look, and I don't know, it made me like Emily even more.
Do you think that's This isn't to insult Emily in any way, but do you think that rises to something that Andy will bring up on the reunion? Or yes. Do you think it's for Emily's kind of like package, segment?
Yeah. 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 Hmm. Without a doubt.
Interesting.
Because it kind of got brought up last time and it gives her something besides the Shane plot. To talk about.
Which is so depressing.
Yeah. It's depressing, but it's like ultra depressing too, because I don't think they're going to fully like go there with it. Like, I think we got what we're gonna get from it, and I think we were all like, oh, is this going to lead to some sort of like
divorce, you think?
I was hoping, but I think we're gonna get some therapy, and that's gonna be that on that. You think about it, and it's like, you know, for instance, you forget like the lives that these women lead, but it's like Tamara was with Simon for 15 years.
Insane.
And it's like, you look at this Emily thing and like, we're 2 years in, but like this has been her life for, I think they've been together for like 10 years or so, however long, but it's like, this is not, we might be freshly, you know, keen to these dynamics, but a lot of the bullshit that we, because honestly, if I could write one sort of like future piece about the show, like a big, you know, opus, it would be sort of how the Real Housewives has exposed us to the bad husbands of the world. I really think this show, through so many examples, has exposed the house husbands of America. And I think that Shane is just such a great example of just like, this is the thing that so many women think is acceptable. And I think, again, I'm going to use the word exposed, because I really do think some of the, what this show did was show us just the amount of wonderful women, because most of these women are extremely smart and capable and strong, and I think that we've just had to witness these like pussy ass husbands time after time.
And I don't know where it comes from, but there is something, and I'm not going to say it's like specific to the ladies, but it's like, not necessarily we can fix you or we can make this work, or I think I'm supposed to love you.
Yeah.
Like, in spite, what's that whole fucking, I love you not despite, but in spite, or yeah, not in spite, whatever the fuck. But there's something that happens where we think it's our responsibility to take on their faults.
Yeah.
But the reverse of that is never their reality.
Well, you also see a lot of men, especially in the earlier years of all the shows, contending with this idea of their wives becoming breadwinners suddenly. Yeah. And sort of them, I know like the Alexis Jim plot that happened in season 7, which was like this idea of like, I want to go and do this news thing one day a week. And he's like, well, one day a week can become 2 days a week. And it's like, yeah. And like, it's just this sort of idea of these men feeling like they had this archetype of being at the head of the family, and these women come along and push up against this years into their marriage, and these men sort of like questioning. Do you want to bring up briefly though, iconic man, husband, former husband of the show, Don Gunvalson, amazing man.
Chef's kiss, prayer to the sky.
Loved her. Treated her well.
She did not deserve him. I don't care what she says about him having affairs, whatever. So did you, by the way, boo.
Yes.
Where did Brooks come from?
Yes.
It didn't happen.
But no,
just out of nowhere.
He was such a good man.
Such a good man.
And also like,
still a grandpa, by the way.
Mm-hmm. And like, just really respectful and carried mm-hmm. himself well. Didn't mm-hmm. fight with the other women. Like, just didn't play by the rules, because the rules say to fight. So, loved Don.
And still has a great relationship with Brianna, with the grandkids, with the weird husband. I don't know where he and Michael are, because I don't know how active Michael is on social media, but I'm sure he and Michael are doing great. Everyone, I don't think he's attractive, but also I like meatballs. So it's like, I think Travis on Dallas is like a tasty little delight, because I am mentally something. So speaking of Dallas, it happened, guys, and that is all the time we're going to spend on it, because it does not matter.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to this season, but I watched you last season and you were better then. It's like the leftovers that are just not working out after being in the microwave for I don't know how many episodes.
Can I say one quick thing about Dallas though?
Yeah.
I feel like Dallas is suffering from the six syndrome, which is, it really needs a seventh woman. I think you'll notice like this trip with OC having Vicky to complete the cast and make it seven.
It really did
help. I just think Housewives are best in seven or eight in the case of season seven of Real Housewives of New York, which gave us our only cast of eight. But I just like a seven dynamic. I think it just adds so much more flavor. And I think one thing that Dallas particularly suffers from is the idea that it has so many inherent pairs within the cast.
Yeah.
And so I just think it's a really hard cast to sort of mix up. And I think that the new Carrie is such an odd addition, not because I don't like her, but just I'm so curious when they were like looking to shake up this show. It's the same thing I thought when they brought Emily into OC. It's like, what was it that they saw in this audition tape that made them say, yes, this is the one?
She is a perfectly fine person.
Yeah.
But that is not what I'm watching this show for. And noting the ratings are what they are for Dallas. Yeah. They could not gamble in this way. And
lovely
lose.
Home, though. Lovely home.
Lovely home. Beautiful. Beautiful gowns. But like, what else is there? You were not in a position where you could really roll the dice and make a choice that seems to be so off center. Because if you lose, I would think the show is like series finaling. I don't know. So you bring up bad house husbands and their historic place in the franchise. And listen, we got to talk a little bit about Potomac. And guys,
I mean, besides Roni, but like I'm saying in current rotation,
their favorite as in it is the best. And or it is the most enjoyable for me to watch.
Both.
Right? This season is one of the best seasons of
any franchise.
Yeah,
but I'm one of those rare people where, because everyone's like, oh, start with season three. I liked Potomac from the get-go.
You liked it season one?
I loved it. I loved it. I love the original Katie. oh my God, and I love...
instead of her replacement, new Katie?
Yeah, and like I love Charisse, and I liked it from the beginning. But I agree that it's... I understand the idea that like it really snapped this season.
Well, allegedly Charisse is like filming again, which God bless, she is fantastic. She's a great foil for
give me like the divorce Giselle. Papers of Eddie, and like let's get Shasha like back in the ring.
I miss that champagne room. We saw it being built. I want it to see being used.
So
guys, I got some Sandals of Gold from you about American Sweetheart Michael Darby, and I am just gonna read them and then I want us to discuss. Satchel Gold from Beth in Santa Monica. I just watched the third part of the Potomac reunion. Michael Darby is perhaps the most garbage person to ever be on Bravo, and I wish Bravo would hold him more accountable. And part of that is covering the context race has in this. To watch a smirking white man gaslighting a bunch of women of color about groping the bodies of men of color was chilling. We should all be used to watching amoral white men assume they decide what truth and reality is, but this was over the top. Bravo, how many production staff and talent have to tell you what's happening for you to believe them over a single rich white man? That was something. Another satchel from M in Sydney. Michael blaming grabbing guys' arses. Oh, I love arses. In the past as being a cultural norm in Australia is complete bullshit. It is deemed to be sexual assault in Australia just as it is in the U.S. Satchel of Gold from Emily in Staten Island. Andy was way too easy on Michael and Ashley. They purposely evade the questions and he culture shames Americans. I do not get why Andy didn't push him more. Also, shout out to Emily, who lives in Staten Island, for using the sentence Americans. Yeah. I love that. And one more satchel from Renee in Auckland, New Zealand.
Ugh.
In the we got a nice little
love Real Housewives of Auckland.
For real. In the I've never seen it. In the Australian justice system, in a case without physical evidence, a case can be made circumstantially with the testimony of multiple witnesses that prove a pattern of behavior. I know this because a friend of mine was going to be flown over there to testify against someone this week. So his arguments and denials were worthless. There is a pattern of behavior here. Guilty. Guys, there's a lot. There is this. I gotta say, I want to ask you, this is a lot to like discuss. So don't feel like I just wanted to say what the people are saying so we can talk about whatever we talk about. But I watched part three and
wish we had a part four.
I did not like the way it went down. I felt like I wonder if the camera woman who was holding a piece of equipment and doing her job and in a place where she couldn't physically like bat away someone that was assaulting her, how this would go down if it was a man of color being accused of assaulting a white woman, or any man being accused of assaulting any woman. I think it would be a different conversation. I don't like the lens put over this, that there's something comical about it. I really appreciate Karen for sitting on the couch and doing the job of Karen and Katie, who absolutely needed to have been there, regardless of whatever she said on fucking social media, because we really needed people to step up to the plate. And I did not like the way that the questions were posed. I felt like it was being narrated in a way, like even the ending, the I have to go to the bathroom, I understand that that happened, and like whatever Ray said, which P.S., I'm sorry, I'm all over the place, but I have a lot of emotions about this. When Ray was like, I saw you do it, and then it became a joke because Andy's like, I don't remember. And Michael started to excuse it. He's like, we were joking around. So yeah, it sounds like he really did do something that looked to other people like he was touching someone without their consent. It is super problematic for me, and layered with the fact that there is this lens of like, well, Michael must be in the closet, when similar to someone being assaulted while they were drinking or the other person was drinking, and it's like, you know, I was drunk. Drinking a lot does not make you a rapist, and being gay does not make you a predator. And I think I am super uncomfortable, and none other than fucking Candace said it best with like, I am, she said when she didn't, when they were in between whatever, I am uncomfortable being around him. I am uncomfortable with the way that he was able to use this platform to gaslight America.
Preach.
I mean, did you, I want to hear your perspective, because like, am I completely, I might be completely off base, and P.S., I'm part of, I don't know, the sunken place a little. Well, that's not the right use of the sunken place, which is a terrific movie. Everybody watch Get Out. But I have found elements of this entertaining. Like, I can't say like, how dare you, because this season was fantastic. And a huge part of it was like, what the fuck is happening with Michael? I have laughed at Giselle's jokes. For some reason, I assumed that during the reunion, he would be buried. So I thought this was leading to a place where it's like, ta-da, we all know you're lying and you sound like a fucking moron and case closed.
Well, I think I don't have a take on this, but to say that I think it part of what I think excuses what like you mentioned, sort of like the flippancy of how it was discussed, was like, we're talking about a butt grab and not a rape, which is not to say that we're not discussing assault, but I just think that it makes it a little bit more palatable in terms of, I don't think we would be laughing about it if someone was assaulted in a, I don't want to use the word, more serious way, because any assault is serious. But again, I would be lying if I tried to say, I don't think a butt grab is the same thing as myriad other ways in which people can sort of be taken advantage of. And so I think that's why there was sort of a cavalier way in which it was covered early on. I mean, clearly Michael's a villain.
Like an IRL villain, guys. Like it's a sad, genuine villain.
Ashley, who's a very smart person, stand by him. However, she's been standing by him since, you know, we met her and were exposed to sort of his like weird behavior. I think with regards to someone's comment about Bravo's actions here, I feel strongly about the fact that Bravo and the show have no sort of moral obligation to make any sort of commentary on sort of like how things like this ought to be handled. So I understand the frustration of that the commenter, but I don't think it's Bravo's job to manipulate the narrative or to create some sort of moral good to come of it. And I mean, like, as you pointed out with the Candace quote, it's just kind of uncomfortable that these women have to film with this man, but it's also really uncomfortable that Ashley, who really deserves a lot, she's such a smart, wonderful human, that she has to sort of like be with this disgusting man. And I think it's interesting, if anyone came out really favorably on the reunion besides Monique's dress, it would be Chris, Candace's Chris.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it just goes to show you that, like, and it's Chris on paper. It's like he's has kids with two other women before marrying Candace, and ostensibly doesn't have his life the most together, but has proven throughout his time on the show to be a good man and a very loyal fiance, now husband. I just think it's sort of like you see all the different variants of kinds of men and the loyalty to their women. And so I think the Michael Darby thing's an uncomfortable plot line in that, like, we didn't land anywhere with it, and it got weird because it, like, broke the fourth wall in a way that was interesting, but problematic, and Michael's problematic, and then, like, Chris Samuels, like, staying on his side is also problematic, and I love Chris Samuels.
I love him so much.
So, yeah, but I mean, I think it was a really good part three for Karen, and I think Karen sort of, you know, spoke as the avatar of the viewer, and looked beautiful, might I add. As did all the women. My God.
Yeah, they looked stunning.
So beautiful. I love a coordinated color.
That's what I said to somebody the other day. They were like, I didn't like their outfits. And I said, what the fuck are you talking about?
Get some taste.
No, it's perfect.
Yeah,
perfect.
No, they looked so good. They are beautiful women.
Yeah, they're stunning.
And I just want to say on the record, I think Gisele Bryant is one of the most beautiful women alive.
She's stunning.
It's insane. But
and
yeah.
Also, P.S. She's the opposite of Luann. She gives a great interview, and she is willing to, like, go absolutely everywhere.
Totally.
She's shady AF. Yeah, she's great.
Yeah. So I think it's uncomfortable. I think I want cameras up right away. I want to start filming season 5, literally from the time they left the reunion. And I say, let's kick season 5 into high gear, and sort of, we need to sort of see where this goes in order to sort of assess, because we either didn't land anywhere, or we didn't land anywhere satisfying. And so I'm extremely optimistic about sort of like where we take this plot, or like, do we ditch this plot, or like, how do we get out of this?
Why is Michael, who seems to be responsible for making his own decisions as well as his wife's, why is he interested in having Ashley continue to participate on this show if it is as shameful and disgusting as he said this week?
Well, I would imagine that it's for the financial incentive for Ashley, in the event that something would happen for their marriage, that she would have some sort of nest egg. Do they do a prenup? I can't remember.
Oh, yeah. And then she, like, agreed to extend
it, whatever.
But there are incentives for them to stay together. Maybe it's $1 million. Maybe it's whatever.
Yeah. But so I think it's for her to have some kind of finances. And I think probably in his mind, if they stay the course, they can right the ship. I'm not justifying it, but I'm just saying, I bet in his mind, it's sort of like he can control the narrative if he's still aboard the narrative. Versus, like, I'm trying to think who's someone that, like, left. Oh, like Adrian Maloof. Who left on a bad note and lost control of the narrative.
Her final role as a housewife is not showing up.
Yeah.
Or decision, whatever the fuck it was. Yeah, yeah.
Icon. but yeah, so I extremely great drama produced by the show. Perfect cast. Wonderful. Monique and Candace are those rare additions that, like, gelled so well from Monique, not from the get-go, but, like,
yeah, she took a season.
And I'm super excited to see Monique season 5 post baby. I'm really excited to see, like, what's next for Monique. And I think that Potomac is so special in having the Karen Gisele and having the two matriarchs sort of thing, because unlike Roni, which is like Bethany's territory, or Beverly Hills, which is Vanderpump's, you know, or Dallas, which is Leanne. It's like Potomac really has two women on the top.
God bless.
And they're actually, like, equally, like, you really can't out, like, they both bring different things and are so important. And I just think Potomac is a great, like, sign for, like, the heartbeat of Real Housewives as a franchise, to say that, like, okay, like, we can churn out new cities and have them be really good, because, you know, we weren't super excited about Potomac or Dallas when they were first announced or debuted, and their first seasons. I mean, I loved the first season of Potomac, but, like, lukewarm for most people. So, and I mean, I'm excited to see, the rumor is that they're currently filming another one, a new Housewives.
Wait, new city?
Yeah.
What? You're looking at me. Your eyes just got extra sparkly.
So we'll see.
Midwest?
California.
What other? Oh my God, guys, I'm so not a California person. It's like, what else is there outside of LA? Is it Real Housewives of LA, which is what Beverly Hills is? Are you going to tell me as soon as we stop?
Sure.
Fantastic.
And this is a rumor. I don't know anything. I've heard.
Because, you know, there have been rumors of like they're filming here and they're filming there and it's not them.
Yeah. I just have.
I'm just staring at you. Yeah. I'm staring you down. California?
Yeah. Unless.
Really?
Well.
After the success of. Well,
so wait, now that I'm saying it, because the city, it's either California or Texas. Because I know that.
Texas makes more sense. I would think it would be Houston.
No.
San Antonio? Which I read somewhere, but I didn't believe it. Maybe it's because I've been to San Antonio and I was like, this isn't the place.
Or maybe I read the same thing and it's not true.
I don't think San Antonio is true.
I think that they're filming a new Housewives right now. And what I think is that they're filming a show right now with seven women in a city and will either become a Housewives, or if they don't end up doing it, they'll rebrand it as like a Married to Medicine or like a new sort of show. But I do think that a show is being filmed right now with the possibility of a new Housewives franchise.
Which is something that I discussed with Caroline Stanbury last week, which is if your show had been... Phenomenal.
Don't get me started on Leaving
but if
London.
I can't, but if her show had been branded as The Real Housewives of London, it would have been a different journey. I know that it was really expensive to produce, but it was top quality and it was misunderstood.
Genius.
And also, P.S., speaking of shows that aren't branded as Real Housewives that you should absolutely be watching, I know people love Below Deck, whatever, like, great, fine, whatever. Fucking Married to Medicine is such an unbelievable. I know that the spinoff was not great, but it is Married to Medicine OG. Like, it is unfucking believable. There was the dissolution of a marriage that was announced in part whatever of a reunion that was repaired in real time by the cast rallying around a couch and forcing a husband and wife who had filed for divorce and were awaiting paperwork to work that shit out. And Andy was dead quiet and was like, said after, this is the realest shit I've ever seen. And was entirely correct. Married to the journey, if you want a journey of a woman, the journey of all of these women from like season one to season two, completely different people. Mariah from like what, it's people that are watching Married to Medicine right now, I hope are nodding. P.S. It's National Boyfriend Day. My boyfriend, who I want to just give some love to, Dr. Damon, who is happily married on Married to Medicine, but I do not care. He is a fucking treasure of a teddy bear, of a doctor, of a man. It is, do you watch it? You don't watch
it.
I
don't.
Oh my God.
Evan, but you're convincing me. It is, but I do want to say it really quickly on Ladies of London.
Tell me.
Ladies of London, its original conceit is so strong because in the first season, it was all about these three American girls versus these Brits. And all of the drama was sort of predicated on the idea of like, the Brits had class and the Americans didn't. And the Americans were trying to infiltrate the city. And that like sort of, that sort of got things going. And then basically it was like, Juliet, who's an American, and Caroline, who's British, became like friends, and it was all about sort of like how that sort of like ruined all of like etiquette as they knew it. And I just feel like, and then season two brought in Juliet Montague, who is, should be canonical. But I just think, I totally agree with you. I love Ladies of London so much. I will say briefly, for anyone that's listening that has never seen it, just do season two. Love season one, and I like season three, but season two is like when everything like really gets going. And I absolutely agree with you. And I think it's a travesty that they did not stick with that show, because that cast is wonderful. And rest in peace to
Scott.
No,
he was murdered or killed or committed suicide.
No.
Oh yeah. 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 Mary Beth, Marianne
McQueen's friend.
That's how she's known. Alice Marie.
Anyway,
oh my God. It's her and that horse that she fell off of.
Rest in peace. A good woman. This time,
She was.
Not Juliet.
No, she had old money.
Oh, Annabelle. Annabelle.
It's her name, Elizabeth Old Money.
Cut this. No, rest in peace, Annabelle.
Rest in peace. Yeah, so guys, and P.S., you can watch essentially the entire series illegally online if you know how to Google misspellings of Ladies of London, because the day before I interviewed Caroline Stanbury downtown, I literally watched the entire, all of season three, I want to say, and parts of two. Because I'd already seen it, but like it had been a couple years.
Although I didn't like in season three, they did, who was Sophie and Caroline weren't friends anymore?
Yeah, because they were former sisters-in-law and then.
Yeah, I didn't like that.
They're friends again.
Okay, good.
She doesn't speak to, oh God, I can't even remember, Adela. She said that Adela was like,
oh, wow.
Yeah. That
Adela, and Adela was like the equivalent of friend of.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Who wanted it desperately to be on the show.
I wouldn't have hated it.
I am so desperately happy that you came on the People's People's Couch. This was a dream. Like, you have, there were discussions that we had that I have of things I had never before considered. And to be 126 episodes in and feel like this is the series beginning is something.
Well, thank you. And congratulations on being 126 fucking episodes in. Can you believe it?
Congratulations to the listeners for keeping up with me.
Yeah. No, but honestly, that's really fantastic that you've done this and that you've had so many. And thank you for having me.
Oh my God, such a pleasure. Tell the people how to follow you. Because guys, his social media, oh my God, it is so, it's like, just wonderful. A+++. A+++.
I am Evan Ross Katz on all social media platforms. I am probably at my best on Instagram story.
No, your Twitter is also magical.
My Twitter, well, thank you. But my Twitter is a little bit more, my thoughts are a little bit more guarded just because it's more public.
Yeah.
It's like, obviously I still carry, but like, it's just more thoughtful version, and I'm a little bit more unhinged on my Instagram story because then I can, you know, wake
fly
up
free
and forget that it ever happened.
Amen. God bless. Follow me on everything. Twitter at Sarah Galley, Instagram at Dame Galley. You guys, this was so wonderful. Thank you so much for joining me. I hope to see you again soon.
Yeah, thank you.
And guys, let us know your thoughts and feels. Okay, bye-bye.